Germany tonight. Anybody here heard of the Tausendhausen? This goes out to Tollhausen. Take a seat, Jay. I'm gonna make it.
Ain't nothing but a happy day. Molly tables. Hey, seid vernünftig, wir wollen nur die Absperrung neu bauen. Es geht nicht, Leute werden verletzt, okay? Bitte seid vernünftig, ich möchte nicht, dass irgendjemand verletzt wird. Bitte seid vernünftig, ihr Frauen, es ist ein Konzert und kein Boxkampf, okay? Die Security hier vorne in den Rückenschatz wollen euch helfen. Die wollen, dass nicht irgendjemand verletzt wird, also lasst sie ihren Job tun. Okay? Einmal, Freunde, wir sind hier ein Team. Wir sind hier alle ein Team, weil wir wollen eine geile Show haben, okay? Und dafür arbeiten wir jetzt. Gebt uns ein paar Minuten Zeit, bitte, ich bitte euch. Okay, wir möchten nicht, dass irgendjemand verletzt wird. Im Namen der Veranstalter, der Bands, im Namen aller Leute, bitte. Okay? Bitte seid für die, es geht direkt weiter und umso geiler als vorher, weil dann wird niemand verletzt und jeder hat eine geile Zeit, okay? Vielen Dank. Wir haben es geschafft. Okay, wir wünschen euch viel Spaß und vielen Dank für eure Geduld. Okay? eine Sekunde. Hört ihr mir wieder eine Sekunde zu? Edmund, ich stehe bitte hier nicht zu meinem eigenen Vergnügen. Ich möchte euch eine Mitteilung machen. Der Bassist von Ramones hat sich den Arm gebrochen. Das ist noch nicht schon ein paar Tage her. Moment. Moment. Der Doktor ist gerade bei ihm und untersucht ihn. Ich bitte euch 5 bis 10 Minuten zu warten, dann haben wir ein Ergebnis. Hört bitte zu, ich stehe hier nicht zu meinem Vergnügen. Bitte sagt mir genau. Ich kann nicht dafür, ihr kann nicht dafür, niemand kann was dafür. Bitte habt Geduld. Okay? Vielen Dank.
Hey, we want to apologize to you and explain to you that CJ, before coming here, was in a motorcycle accident, and before we came on stage, they shot him up with anesthesia. But when we had to stop playing because of the barricades, the anesthesia wore off, and now he can't move his arm, and they had to rush him to the hospital. And that's the story. And we're fucking sorry, all right? As we wanted to play...
Ihr habt alle verstanden, der Bassist ist leider ins Krankenhaus gefahren. Es tut uns leid. Okay? Ja, das ist die Wahrheit. Okay, ihr habt ihn gehört. Das war Joe.
Das ist ja mal cool, ey.
Oh, it's all done. It's all coming out second week of September.
Last time you talked about releasing it in June or May already.
Yeah, it's going to coincide with our American tour. We started tour in October, and it's going to be a package tour that we don't have all the bands. L7 are confirmed. There's going to be like a middle band in us, and we're talking with... we've been talking with a bunch of different people, but we haven't decided who it's going to be. It might be Iggy, it might be Henry Rollins, it might be... There are a number of people, even this band playing right now, we're considering. But it's all done, and it's the best album we ever made. It's a great record. Ed Stasian produced it, and it's really different than anything we've done in the past, you know? It's like real explosive and raw. Well, the song, the content, the kind of every song is like a great song, but the song's very colorful. I mean, like, maybe to some degree, maybe if there's a bit of Road to Ruin in there, but I don't think there's any, I mean, this album has a nature of its own, in a sense, that I don't feel we've done anything quite like this before, you know what I mean? It just, it's 100% Ramones as far as power and excitement, but yet it surpasses anything we've ever done before.
So you're going...
And it deals with more topical things, and, you know, yet it's loaded with, like, diversity and variety, color, character, personality. But it's also the best vocals I've ever done, and it's, I think I've never really enjoyed making an album quite as much as I've made this one. You know? It's also CJ's first album with us.
Okay. And it was called, it's the first track on the album which is longer than 4 minutes, actually.
No.
It's live.
Yeah, it's live. I mean, maybe, you know, there are a few 4 minute songs, you know, they don't. There's no, we don't have any of the end We don't know. We have like, we don't have any of those on our record. But I think it's just a real, this album's kind of sacred to me, you know? And then, you know, we did do a cover of our own rendition of Take It As It Comes. It was done by The Doors. And we have a couple of guest people on the album, like Vernon Reed's on one cut, and Joe McGinty's on a cut, and Flo and Eddie, and Daniel Ray. Yeah. They're on two songs. And Daniel Ray, who's kind of been a friend of ours for a while, has done some stuff. Him and Andy Chernoff are both part of the record, too.
Sounds like totally new working conditions. Totally new way to work.
Yeah, we worked a whole different way. It's a new approach, and but it's a very natural approach. It's not like trying to prove anything, though I feel we've proven a lot, you know what I mean? And the feedback that we're getting so far, I mean, I know how I feel about the album, but people say it's the album of the year and this and that. But, you know, I mean, it's really for you guys to say, you know what I mean? But I've never been more proud of anything I've ever done than this.
Okay, but you're in a pretty good position at the moment. The Ramones being that big again after the like in the 80s.
Well, say, things keep getting bigger, and you know what we initiated. Like, I mean, now the whole scene now is really what we kind of set off back, you know, in our you know 74, 76. I mean, all the bands now, or like Nirvana and Pearl Jam and whoever it is, you know, have all. I mean, from the Pistols on, have adapted our trademark foundation sound and, you know, spirit and energy and the whole bit, you know. But now it's like the prevalent sound. Now it's the dominant form of music in the world. It's like, you know, basic and creative and exciting. You know?
So it's all the little Ramones in the world now?
Oh, yeah, a lot of little Ramones. I mean, it's exciting because music's exciting again. All the bullshit's gone. You know what I mean? Well, not really gone. It's like exciting music is the dominant force, and then you have your CNC Music Factory on the other side. You know what I mean? So that's good, you know.
Is there any new band which you would consider as successors of the Ramones?
As successful?
As successors.
As what? Successors?
Yeah.
Motorhead. I mean, there aren't many bands that I like personally. I mean, I like bands, but there's no bands that I can hold up and say I love this band. They changed my life. You know, I mean, there are a few people I can say that about, but nobody of current day, let's say, right? I mean, you know, I've always loved the Stooges and Iggy. Iggy's like a hero, and I can put him up on the pedestal. You know what I mean? But I can't say that about too many other people, you know? I mean, I guess of current day, a band that I really like is Totenhosen. Because they have that spirit, they have that fun and that color, and it's not pretentious, it's just natural. They're having a good time, you know?
They're playing the biggest tours in Germany, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think that's, like, great, you know? I mean, I'm proud of them, and now, I know their album's doing really well, and that's great. And
do you ever do a tour with them in the States, baby?
Well, that's something that they want to do with us, you know, on our tour. The only thing is that we kind of want to have bands that can hold their own, you know? Because, but yeah, at some point, we'd love to, you know? I mean, whether it be in the States or Germany or Europe or wherever, you know what I mean? That'd be great.
What would the album be called, anyway?
Mondo Bizarro.
Bizarro. Yeah. Bizarro work, I think.
Well, it's sort of like almost like an Italian kind of one of those B films or something like that, you know, almost kind of like a spaghetti western type of one of those kind of things, and it means world of the bizarre, which we're all living in, and it just it's a cool kind of name.
What about is Ed Stasi something like your standard producer at the very moment? Because you've tried so many different producers, from Bruce Spector up to your former drummer.
Yeah. Well, I know what you're saying. Well, I guess Ed understands us best. He knows how to get us best on record, you know. And the albums he had done with us were Too Tough to Die, that was 6 years ago, and Rocket to Russia, Road to Ruin, and Leave Home. And, you know, he just knows how to get the most out of us, and we just enjoy working with him, you know what I mean? He really knows how to, you know, just get our best sound on vinyl, you know? But this time we went a little further, you know, I mean, it's all natural, but it was just a more creative thing, you know what I mean? The whole album was just, we really took the time and made it, you know, special. Even though we did it in 6 weeks.
6 weeks. So
like Bruce Springsteen, you know, spending 6 weeks on an album.
But you're not playing 3 hours and that's it. It's like so the album was finished in February, something like that, right?
Yeah, it was done like in March or something like that. It was with the mastering and all that.
So you must be really getting it is released finally.
Well, you know, we went in, did a bunch of pre-production. We worked really hard on the record, you know.
But it's not the reason that Local Life was released that late in the States, huh?
It was released late because, I think it's supposed to come out earlier, actually, but they just saw or whatever. Also, we switched labels when a new record
comes.
That's
the next question. Uh-huh. Because you told me in November that you're actually about to change the sign.
Right.
Are we now?
Yeah, now we're with Radioactive, it's MCA.
Right, and that's your manager, Gary Kaufman.
Yeah, yeah. But in Europe, we're still with Chris Liss, EMI.
Was it possible that you still have the same producer all over the year, the same manager all over the years?
Well, we had another manager before Gary, with Danny Fields.
Okay.
But Gary's really, you know, great at what he does. He's a really great businessman, and he knows what's good. And the thing that part of the appeal of him was that he's kind of like, he's kind of an oddball type of guy as far as his taste. You know, I mean, he likes people from left field, not from the mainstream. That was kind of an attraction, you know, with Talking Heads and the B-52s originally. That was, you know, part of the attraction that, you know, like, because I mean, ourselves, we were always kind of misunderstood, and we were kind of like an alien, bunch of aliens or whatever. People never knew what to make of us, and then we kind of liked Gary for that reason, that he would deal with bands that weren't sure of the norm, you know, like Talking Heads and the B-52s at that time, you know. And he's got a really good roster of artists, and now his record company, he's signing a lot of really good bands too, but it's like the ground floor of something fresh and new and exciting, you know, not stale. And, you know, like, I mean, Warner Brothers, it's a fat company. They're like, they're not hungry, and we're hungry, you know.
Gary is as well, yeah.
Gary is too, yeah. He's got something to prove. He's got a record company, and, you know, and he's hungry, and Al Teller from MCA is hungry, and they both wanted to sign us. So collectively, you know.
But Radioactive is distributed by MCA in America.
Yeah, yeah. But they're very excited. Everybody's very excited. Like, we just did a tour of Canada about a month ago, and it wasn't even MCA's time to start working with us, but they set up all the press and they came to all the shows, and that's a sign of enthusiasm. That's great, because with a lot of labels, man, they just don't care, you know. They sign you and then they don't give a shit about you. So I feel after all this work, you know, I mean, things are maybe finally paying off a bit in that respect, in the record area respect, you know what I mean? Because, I mean, we work no matter what, you know, we play, whether we have an album out or not, we don't really care, we just enjoy playing for
just
our fans.
Right. Okay.
That's what it's all about, right? Playing and, you know, playing for you, because you enjoy it, and playing for your fans.
It must be really funny for you, this Gabba Gabba Hey and the Hey Ho, let's go every night for just, let's say, 15 years.
It's,
and people go,
it's beautiful music. Music to the ears. No, it's. I mean, one thing about our fans, they're like no one else's. They're totally loyal, totally diehard fanatics, you know?
And they're getting younger and younger.
And they're getting younger, and they're still, and then, I mean, kind of the beauty of it all is that it's like in its third generation, and I mean, we have fans of all different ages, all different walks of life, backgrounds, musical tastes, you know. And it's not just like one set fan. It's like, you know, kids, you know, from 16, lower, people in their 40s and 50s, people who are into, you know, like people who are fans of the Ramones, or they're a lot, they have a lot of, I mean, different people, like they might be into the Grateful Dead and be a fan of the Ramones too, which is, you know, kind of nice. It's a big party.
But it would have been impossible 15 years ago.
Well, it started from word of mouth. It was a word of mouth thing, you know. It wasn't a package or some kind of manufactured bullshit thing that some record company genius thought of or something like that. You know what I mean? It's always been real and honest, you know. And that's why it works, because it's real. It's not, you know, it's not put together. It's not pretentious. It's not, you know, I mean, we don't use tapes and we don't do this and we don't, you know, it's not artificial. It's people relate and they like it.
But you've tried once with respect to the fact that you tried a whole section or something like that?
No. We never tried anything. We've always been us. I mean, there was a time in England when Baby I Love You was top five hit or something. And the boys were touring with us because we were always big fans of the boys. We asked them to support us. And so when Baby I Love You was doing well, we asked the keyboard player from the band to play with us, give it maybe a fuller kind of sound. And it sounded really cool like that. It sounded like a hard rock version of Baby I Love You or something. And that was what we did. We never used horns or anything like that. Though on the record, I think it was pretty cool because on that track it was... Actually, the band wasn't even on that track. It was all Phil's cronies. And that was very exciting because, like, all his old cronies were all hanging out at the session. And it was like all these people were really, you know, famous and, you know, just great, great people that, you know, you kind of, you know, grew up in awe of, you know. And, you know, I was like the young kid there, you know. And, you know, all telling stories. It was just great, man. It was just like, you know, hearing all these stories about how it was in the 50s and this and that. And how I heard the story about, like, Phil would talk about how they had all these, like, radios in the trunk of a car. And they'd drive to all the radio stations and they'd, you know, they'd say, oh, you know, you're playing the record. And if, you know, if they were playing it, you know, so many times, they'd give them, like, a radio or, some, you know, a mink coat or, I don't know. I don't think a mink coat, but... It was just like those, and I think, well, watches, they were watches. They were like Seiko, but they were missing the eye. You know, it's like, I like hearing those stories, you know. But it was Jim Keltner on drums, and Darlene Love was hanging out, and all these people. It was really cool. You know? And it was, you know, but we kind of gave Phil, like, free run on that song. I mean, we picked it, you know, we picked it even before we knew we were going to work with Phil, because we always liked it, you know. But we didn't think we were gonna do it like he slowed it down, changed it. We didn't think it was gonna be done quite that way. But I think it really came out good, and I like the album. You know, it's mixed what people think of that album. You know, some people say it's not a Ramones album. Some people love it. You know, so like anything else we've done, you know, but maybe with Phil it was an experiment. You know, because Phil would always come follow us around L.A. and say, if you guys. Don't work, more or less, if, he would say, do you want to make a good album or a great album? Meaning, if we didn't work with him, it would only be a good album, you know, so, it was an experiment, you know, and, it was insane, but it was a real experience, something that you'll, you know, something you'll never forget, and, I'm glad we did it, because I learned a lot, and, also it was the first album that I really got to, really express myself on in a lot more ways than just the vocals, because I did most of the writing on that album, and I really got to, I kind of was able to get the songs exactly how I want them, different parts and this and that, which was something I wasn't really able to do so much earlier on, because Tommy would kind of take precedence over the session to some degree in the earlier days, you know. So it was good.
So how would you actually characterize the Ramones in 1992 compared with the one that started in Queens in 1974?
You know, the band's grown and evolved. And, I mean, I feel we've, you know, we've, I feel with it, you know, we're similar. I mean, I speaking for myself, I can just say I've done a lot of living. You know what I mean? And that's how I've maybe changed. You know what I mean? And that's what life's all about. You know.
So everybody was surprised when Didi actually left the band after Brain Drain. And everybody was suggesting how to fill this gap with songwriting when he left them. But what? Meanwhile, it turned out that Didi also contributed songs to the album.
But Didi?
The new bass player.
Oh, nah. I mean,
the wrong person.
Well, me and Didi always were the chief songwriters of the Ramones. And
did most of the songwriting of the last albums.
Oh, Didi? After a certain point, Didi would do a lot of writing because I had a falling out with something. I had a falling out with John, so I was sort of pissed, you know. But now with CJ in the band and all, when he entered the band and all, I just really got excited about everything, and the things changed. Everything got better and we all got closer, and I got very inspired, and I wrote seven of the new songs.
So it was really fresh got there.
Yeah, it's been real fresh since you know, the change, since, like, I don't know, a lot of things changed in my life too. Like, I mean, it wasn't just Dee Dee's departure. I mean, a lot of things have opened up for myself. I mean, I'm sober now, and my life's changed a lot, and it's for the better. And I just feel very creative and very inspired. What got me excited about writing in the past is in me now, you know. And I mean, things are. I mean, I'm just. You know, there are just more things that that interest me now. And as far as, you know, maybe where the material comes from, where the inspiration comes from, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's different, and it's real positive and strong. And I just think I'm real, you know, I just feel really good about what was accomplished here, you know?
I thought maybe Didi gave some songs to you from the new album.
Yeah, Didi gave us three songs.
You used them?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's still something like in your background?
Oh, yeah. Well, Didi's, you know, there's no animosities or anything. You know, we get along, and, you know, everybody's doing well. Didi's got a new band, and he's happy. He's trying to get an album deal now.
What's he doing now?
Which band? Didi and the Chinese Dragons, something like that.
Chinese Dragons?
Yeah, Dragons. And so, you know, things are going good, and... You know, like, you know, so in some ways, songwriting is an extension of yourself, and you know, I mean, it's. Oh, Mark wrote two songs too, so that's a first. Yeah.
CJ is now a full member of the band as well.
Yeah. Songwriting. Yeah, except that he broke his arm.
What? Arm?
Yeah, in a motorcycle accident. So he's gonna have to suffer tonight.
Is it a problem for you that he's 10 years younger than you? I mean, he must be 8 years old when he starts to
play. Thanks. Must be a real fan,
then. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the coolest thing is that, you know, that he came in as a real fan.
Okay, we'll take a little break.
All right. And
okay, while it's sunny, can you comment on some classical Ramones stuff in between?
Well, let me just get this
going. Okay.
Wanna hold this? Just pull out. Oh boy, this is tiring, I'll tell you.
Perhaps with the small business.
on, John.
Thank you.
Apart from that, has Rollins, the Ramones ever been a political band, would you say that? Because I know I received a CD where you supported the Rainforest Project, and you were contributing to United Artists Against Apartheid, I think.
Yeah. Well, I would consider myself more political now. Yeah. Well, I mean, for a while now. I've always been aware and outspoken, but now I'm able to contribute more musically and just real, go in and take more of a stance about my feelings, you know what I mean? Like, I have a side project called The Resistance. That's a band when the Ramones aren't working, I get to do stuff. And I've been working on what it is really a band where it's an opportunity to work with different artists and musicians, you know, it's not a set situation, but they're more set people now than they were before, like Ivan Julian from Richard Hell and Voidoids, and Fred Smith from Television, and Andy Chernoff from The Dictators. Huh?
Fred Smith?
No. And, you know, different local musicians who, New York people, you know. And this woman, Joyce Bowden, who sang with David Byrne on his new album, and she does work with him. And there's a band in New York called 1-900-BOX. This woman's name's Chip English. She's a drummer, and she's really good. And, a lot of local people. And it's fun, and it's, creative and constructive, and it actually, it's real strong, and it I learn a lot, and I bring my knowledge back to the Ramones, and I it's circles of poets and writers, it's cool stuff, it's more or less purely political, and but yet it's fun, other thing, getting to try things, and then I get to try things that I maybe haven't tried with the Ramones yet, or maybe can try with the Ramones yet, because the style of music and the different types of things, it's not strictly one set form of music, and it's a lot of fun, I brought a lot of this to the Ramones' new album,
It sounds like as if the New York scene is very vivid at the moment, again.
It's very what?
Vivid and very creative at the
moment. Oh, it is, and it's just, I think also what, just being kind of involved in the whole political arena of what's been happening, what's happening now, it's a presidential election year, there's a lot of stuff going on, It's just like, I think what really intrigues me and interests me now is I get more off on politics, even though there's not so much that you can do, but you can do a lot. You can inform people and you can make them see what's really happening and kind of enlist them, if you want to say that.
So rock music is the right medium to make people listen to.
Oh yeah, because music is the world's communication in a sense, and everybody's into rock music. Everybody, you really can reach everybody. And where kids really discuss with politicians, because they're all, full of shit for the most part. They look up to the artist of their choice or whatever, and so if you're gonna, when you're on that podium, you're reaching a lot of people. You can do something more constructive with that airtime, if you want to say that. And there's so many things that are wrong now with this world. It affects everybody. We're all affected. Whether it be the environment or whatever. There's so many things now that. You can't fix everything, but you can. If you can fix a little piece of it, then you're doing something.
So, rock musician has responsibility towards the public.
If he chooses, he does. Anybody in a that kind of a spotlighted situation, an artist, a writer, or anybody who's got that that position where people respect you and listen to what you have to say, then you. I'm not going to say, well, it's your you have to do this, you know? You know, I mean, if you choose to do it, you can do a lot of good, you know, by doing it.
Some of the songs on the Brain Dead album were about that.
Yeah, Ignorance is Bliss. I believe Miracles. Yeah, I believe Miracles. Yeah. You know, it's yeah, I mean, that feeling and sentiment is there. You know? New album's got more of that feeling too.
So when will we actually come back to Germany? Like in fall? Or?
Yeah. Well, actually, we're thinking about next November.
Next November.
Yeah, we're thinking. You know, like we always come around Thanksgiving or Thanksgiving. We always miss Thanksgiving.
Do you like the Bizarre Festival?
Huh?
Do you like the Bizarre Festival?
Yeah, we like it. It's like our third. It's cool. It's a fun day out in the sun, you know, like with a lot of good bands, you know. So we get to see our friends the Pogues again, you know.
Without the singer.
Yeah, well.
You jump for you?
No, it's funny because when we were in France recently, we played a festival and the Pogues played too, and we were hanging out. And then Spider said, you know, in the encore they do Honky Tonk Woman. And he said, would you come up and like and sing the choruses with us, you know? So I said, yeah, all right. So it was fun, you know.
Sure.
And who drank more?
I'm not drinking no more. But the funny thing was, like, in the hotel, like in France, everything's in French. So it really ain't too much in English. But there was a documentary about Tina Turner, you know, about, you know, her Ike and Tina Turner, and then her downfall, and then when she came to Germany and she started getting popular again, and how Bowie and Jagger and all these people helped her, you know, rise again. So, like, at the end of the song, I said, I feel just like Tina Turner. And he said, yeah, and you look like her, too. But it was fun. I had a good time. And they're really good people. And I think they're a great band. And Spider was singing then, you know? And they're fun, you know? And I mean, and that's, you know, that's important because how many bands are really fun? You know, not too many. You know, they're... Right? Alright.
Okay, before we leave, can you give me one or two sentences to the classical Ramon stuff? Is it possible?
Of the classical
Ramon stuff.
Stuff?
Yeah.
Alright.
Pinhead.
Well, Pinhead came about because of the movie Freaks, Todd Browning. We had seen it in Ohio back in like 77, and at the end, like, it's kind of an initiation, you know, and the freaks go going, Google Gobble, we accept you, you know? And we kind of wrote Pinhead from that, we kind of have the Gabba Gabba Hey being kind of like we're all one together. You know what I mean?
Okay.
With our fans, you know.
It's big ball.
Well, Dee Dee wrote that song. It's really kind of a call to arms. You know, that's how the kids took it the first time they heard it in England, you know? It's kind of like a call to arms, it's time to form your own bands and start the revolution.
Okay. Judy is a Pen?
I wrote that song. I wrote it in Forest Hills. I was walking around one night, and it's about these crazy fans of ours, Jackie and Judy, and they're just their wildness.
Okay. Swallow Your Pride?
I wrote that song in 77. And I wanted to write a Who type of a song because I've always been a big Who fan. You know, right from the first time they ever played America, I saw them in 67. And it was, you know, I've been a fan ever since. And I guess at the time, it just... It's like when we started out, it was 2 years since we started out, and we were getting, like, as I said before, we've always been kind of an alien band, coming out of left field, and it's the kind of, like, you know, you had to kind of swallow your pride because, you know, working really hard and getting a lot of, you know, kind of getting, like, you know, we were kind of, people were refused to like accept us, right?
Yeah. Okay. Now I want to sniff some blues, obviously.
Yeah, Dee Dee and John wrote that song. I'd hang out on the roof tops on Forest Hill sniffing glue.
Rock and Roll Radio.
Huh?
Rock and Roll Radio.
Oh yeah, I wrote that song. It's about the demise of radio. You know, when radio was great. And you know, it talks about like the earlier days, you know, mentioning, well, TV shows that were popular in America, like Hullabaloo and Upbeat and all these shows, and then like mentions you know, like Jerry Lee Lewis and all the, you know, greats of yesteryear. But then like, but really talking about how great rock and roll was and how great rock and roll radio was, because it really turned us on to all the great music that has inspired us. And seeing where's it gone now? It's now radio is all programmed. It's all
big commercial.
It's all commercial. It's all it's all bullshit nowadays. You know, there isn't any real radio anymore.
And the Rock and Roll High School.
Rock and Roll High School came about from being asked to write the title track for the film.
Yeah.
But you know, Alan Arkush asked us, and I had like kind of started writing this song, but it had a different title. It was called Mutant Monster Beach Party. It was from a thing that Punk Magazine was doing. And so I, you know, I finished writing it and changed the title to Rock and Roll High School.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Once it goes to Bigfoot, it's about Reagan.
It's about Reagan coming to the SS cemeteries in Bitburg. And, you know, how outraged we were about it and the country, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it was, he was more or less saying that the Holocaust never happened. And we should just forgive and forget, which was, you know, really sick.
The Rockaway Beach?
Rockaway Beach was written about Rockaway Beach in Queens that we used to hang out at there. It was a hangout.
A hangout?
Yeah.
Okay. The Pet Cemetery, another movie title?
Yeah, that came about because we got asked by Stephen King to, who's a big Ramones fan, to supply the, you know, the theme song for the film, and so that was a real thrill and a real honor, you know, because we're big Stephen King fans too. So.
Animal Boy? Abuse?
John and Dee Dee wrote that song. And I don't know, at the time they were really into animals like warthogs and this and that. I don't know, ask John. Hey John, what's Animal Boy about?
Chinese looks.
Well, Dee Dee, it's about Dee Dee's dope habit.
What's Animal Boy about?
Yeah.
I don't know. What's it about?
Yeah, I watched just comment him on the song.
It's about warthogs and stuff, right?
I don't remember what it's about. I don't remember the words.
One guy left.
10 minutes.
Yeah. It's about the critters. All right, China's Rocks is about shooting heroin.
Okay.
About at the time it was about, well, Dee Dee, you know, used to hang out with Richard Hell and Johnny Thunders, and they all like to shoot up together.
Okay, we shorten it.
About a big party.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sheena's Punk Rocker is one of the really big classic. And the Loudmouth as well.
Yeah, I wrote that song and it was about, actually it had a lot of meanings. It had a lot of meanings running through it, you know what I mean? But basically it's about a girl who leaves the old crowd for something more exciting, like, you know, for like the punk scene, and which, you know, was written in 76 or 70, no, it was written in 76, 77. Like old with, out with the old, in with the new.
Okay, and the Loudmouth, what?
It's about girls with big mouths.
Yeah, it's
all right.
Thanks a lot. I'll be getting tired.